WA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
7-1 Papa Golf, go ahead.
If it was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago.
7-1 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. Hope you all have had a good week. The first of two of our guests tonight is Gene from the US state of Georgia, with his witness account of a UFO being chased by two FA-18s back in the summer of 1994. Then we head over to the UK with Steve in Scotland and his encounter with a craft in 1974. Years later, Steve would recall very vivid memories of being inside the craft.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Gene.
Hey there, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Calling from Georgia today.
That's right, Marietta.
Now, you're going to be sharing several paranormal experiences as well as a UFO sighting?
That's right.
Would you like to start with the earliest account, please, Gene?
Sure. So the earliest account that I have of something strange happening, I was I was 7 years old. It was the year that it was the night, actually, that my grandfather passed away. He was a very big guy, very recognizable shape. He was a naval captain, just a very imposing figure. And our door was cracked. It wasn't shut. It wasn't open. And through the door, it looked like they just walked right in. And it was the shape of my grandfather with this. It was like a yellow aura. And it scared me. But it walked towards the bunk bed. My brother was on the bottom bunk. I was on the top bunk. I pulled the sheets kind of close over to my eyes, and I saw it come up, you know, almost to my face. I pulled the sheets up, and I saw the light kind of dip down like it was going to my little brother, and I screamed. And right about that time, my parents' room was right across the hallway. The door flung open. The lights came on and it disappeared. And my mom found out literally within hours that my grandfather had died of a heart attack, a massive heart attack. He died on the way to the hospital. So I 100% think my grandfather was checking up on us before he crossed over. The events that happened afterwards actually occurred at his house. So this was years later. My mom, my brother, and I were moving into my grandmother's house. It was the house that he passed in. And essentially, my dad had taken a job in North Carolina. Mom didn't want to go. So he was kind of helping us get stuff together before he went and took this contracting job in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was given the room above the garage, which was quite large. It had a vaulted ceiling, four windows on the end. The two windows at the top were like the triangular windows, and then the two regular windows below that. So it was a very imposing room for a kid. I was in the fourth grade at this time. There were two little attic doors on either side of the room that were like half doors where the vaulted ceiling came down. And I had a Star Fox poster from GamePro that I was hanging up on the closet. And I remember basically blinking, and I was at the window hanging it up, and that confused me. And then I realized that it was dark, and it hadn't been dark when I looked out the window earlier, but right in front of me outside the window is the face of a gray. And this, it freaks me out, because the more and more I thought about it and, you know, preparation to go on the show, the more and more details emerged. Like, the thing that's burned into my head is seeing my reflection of myself hanging up the poster in the eye of this being. The detail that I remember is if I reached out the window and touched its head, it seemed like it would be like a dry wetsuit. Like, that was the kind of texture the head had. And it was a little bit less almond shaped than some encounters. It was kind of more of a flatter top. But I immediately dropped the poster, turned around and screamed and ran down the hallway. My dad and my mom, you know, immediately, what's going on? And I, you know, told them what I saw. I wouldn't go back in the room. My dad kind of laughed it off and, like, you know, played like he was looking around outside, like, oh, there's nothing here. You're safe. Nothing to worry about. It just always terrified me to stay in that room, but that was the room I was given. A couple other things that happened that I think are connected is that I remember a few other times during that year, lights coming in from those windows, and the windows faced directly the neighbor's house. It was on top of a hill, so the road was well below where these lights were, and behind the house was just woods for miles. So there was literally no way these lights, unless it was a helicopter shining a spotlight in my window for some reason that wasn't making any noise, that they would appear. And I remember always pulling my covers up above my head. And a couple times I remember waking up in the air next to my bed, where I'd reach down and realize that there was no mattress, and then I'd fall to the floor. After that, and in fourth grade, I had an issue with nosebleeds. It was just weird that I assume was connected with all that. Like I said, I think these experiences follow family lines. My uncle, my mother were also taken aboard a ship in a similar way in Vermont. I really wish I had more information on their experiences, but that pretty much concludes my real close encounters. Because after that, I didn't really experience anything until about 1994, 1995. So I was about 12 years old, 11 or 12 years old. This experience, it had to have been seen by somebody than just me and these neighborhood kids. We were at a swim tennis area. There was tennis courts, a pool, and me and my brother and a couple other neighborhood kids were all swimming. They had adults swim every hour, blow the whistle, the kids get out of the pool for 15 minutes, go play in the parking lot. My mom's playing tennis. It was about 7:30 at night. My brother and I look up, and we see this orange orb kind of just floating in the sky, and it looks like a planet. But my brother and I were very used to looking up at the sky, and we knew that Venus was supposed to be somewhere else. So we were just like, that's really strange. And we kept doing what we were doing, and that corner of our eye, we noticed it just kind of drifting to the north. you know, I didn't know then, but I know now it was drifting to the north. And we watched it go behind the trees and we're like, that was crazy. That must have been some sort of weird plane, because this is before drones. There were no drones in the sky. There was just like jets and prop planes. End of list. That really fit the description to neither. So we were kind of talking about it. And a couple minutes later, we hear like jets. So my brother and I were kind of into military aircraft, been to a lot of air shows. We're very familiar with what, you know, military aircraft can do in regards to capabilities, and what they're not supposed to be doing in a residential area is breaking the sound barrier. So we look up and we see the light right above our heads, and it is going like faster than I'd ever seen anything go in the sky. I mean, it looked like a comet just going right over our heads. And then we see the jets. Now, the jets sound like they're pretty far away, but they're right over our heads. And at that point, the light split into two and went basically from the north, the way it was coming, it was going south, and then it split, and one went southeast and the other went southwest. And the strange thing is, when it split, it didn't lose any mass. Both orbs were the same size as the original orb. And each jet basically banked and went after one orb each. As soon as the jets passed, we heard the sonic boom. I mean, it could have broken a window or two. I mean, it was loud. The thing is, the light was going faster than the speed of sound and wasn't making any sound. The jets, I know they had to have been scrambled from Dobbins Air Reserve Base, and there had to have been 2 to 4 pilots that were chasing a UFO over Marietta, Georgia in the mid-90s. I don't know of anybody else that saw it. I've asked people for years, and I just quit bothering about it because people just thought I was crazy. Like, that doesn't happen here. I mean, this is a residential area. This is a very popular. I live less than 2 miles away from where that event occurred. I mean, there's tons of people around here. This is a very popular suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, one of the most populous cities in the Southeast U.S. And I witnessed a UFO chase right above my head here. There had to be somebody else that has seen it. Had to have been. Other than that, going forward, the paranormal events that took place had to do with my mom. She passed away in 2001. And a few years before she passed, I had asked her there was a way she would contact me if she passed away. And she said if there was any way that she could, she would. So in 2015, it was 14 years after her passing, and on my birthday, I was visiting my grandmother in Alpine, Wyoming. My brother and I had driven out there from Atlanta, Georgia, just to give you an idea. That's a 22.5-hour drive straight through. And I went outside the morning of my birthday. We were going to hike this place called Ski Lake. It's at the Teton Pass, and it's the same hike that my mom, my brother, and my other uncle, who had since passed, had walked on. So it was a really special event for me that day, and it was a really special thing for my family. And I look down on the ground as I light my cigarette, and there's a rock in the shape of a heart. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And I pick it up, and I look at it, and there's the shape of a G etched on the heart, and the granite scratches, and I instantly felt like embraced, like it was a hug. So it definitely was my mom giving me a birthday present. I am 100% convinced of it. And it was cool, but it was just a feeling. You know, later on down the road, I ended up finding my soulmate. Luckily, we got married and had a baby, and he was introduced to my mom from the time he was very little as Mimi Dee Dee. And and pictures and stuff. And he, on two different occasions, talked about her. He said, you know, Mimi Didi's happy, pointing to her in the corner of a townhouse we lived in. And then, when we got moved into the house we're in now and we got settled and everybody was kind of breathing a sigh of relief and fresh air and everything, he looked at my wife and said, Mommy's happy. He looked at me and said, Daddy's happy. He turned around and pointed and said, and Mimi Didi's happy. So he basically confirmed to me that my mom is absolutely hanging out, watching over us and making sure that we're okay. And the interesting thing about the fact that I just randomly told him to call my mom Mimi Didi is when I found this out after contacting my uncle, he and his brother used to call my mom Mimi Didi or Didi when they were little kids. So it's pretty cool that she kind of prefers that name instead of grandma, you know. But yeah, that's pretty much my experience. You know, the other things that I would have to tell from my family would, it's secondhand information, but my Uncle Mark and my mom were both taken aboard a ship. My uncle was communicated with, told that his line is very special and they weren't here to harm anybody, that they were here, that basically we are all their children. And my uncle is a very bullheadish, very not into that kind of stuff guy. They've scared him and he didn't believe it that they were benevolent. He said they treated him like a dangerous animal. But to me, I think that's because of his fear. And I think the message that I've gotten over the years is that genuinely here to just watch and help when it's needed. Kind of the way that, you know, we tag sharks in the ocean and make sure their environments where they're going stay stable. I think it's the same deal. And I don't think we have anything to be worried about. And, you know, the more people that come out and share, the more evidence there is. And I don't really know what more evidence we need than governments around the world acknowledging existence of extraterrestrial craft and acknowledging that we had in possession of vehicles that did not originate from this world. I don't think anybody has anything to be afraid of anymore. And I really think we should stop the foolishness. That's basically my say.
Yeah, I agree with you. To some people, they kind of need a landing on the White House lawn, I'd imagine.
Right. I don't really know what's more clear than government documents acknowledging the existence of extraterrestrial craft. I mean, there's, what else do you need?
Generally, a lot of it's ignored for the last year due to what everything is going on. So not everyone's talking about it.
And whether that's by design or not, you know, that's the big question. Cause you know, there's gotta be forces within that don't want this information to come out because it's not, I don't think it's just the quote panic it would cause. I think it would actually destabilize a lot of governments around the world. And that's what they're afraid of. And destabilization as in like, well, why do we have to listen to you? There's aliens.
I think actually it's more than likely going to be used as a tool.
I hope so.
I think in a negative way, as far as the military goes. I've always said before, you know, it's always fear, you know, that's, it's a really controlling element. And
for sure,
I think it's more than likely that an alien invasion or a hostile enemy would be used in that way. Whether, you know, obviously doubt very much if it'd be true, but I reckon that's what we could be seeing.
That's true. And it just might be, you know, so intense that we really shouldn't know about it. Because, you know, just as there's good and evil forces in the world, there's going to be good and evil forces out of this world as well. And in a galactic society, there's got to be, you know, different entities that want different things out of budding civilizations. So I think what we experience with, you know, alien craft landing and the study of our bodies and our DNA and everything, it could be two different factions trying to get two different outcomes. And the governments are trying to figure out which faction to go with, you know, like it seems like there could be just as much politics galactically as there are here on Earth.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It makes the most sense.
It does, yeah. It also sounds like to me that Mimi Didi was definitely keeping an eye out on her kids.
For sure. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I shouldn't be here and not a lot of reasons why I should. And I would owe that to my guardian angel, my mom. She absolutely watches over my family and makes sure that we're okay. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind.
It's nice as well, isn't it? You're being watched over.
It is. And, you know, whether she crossed over or not, I don't know. But I do know that she has a vested interest in her family. And I'm very appreciative of it.
Yeah, I definitely think she probably pops in now and again.
For sure.
Going back to 1995, and like you said, you know, there wasn't drones flying around. It was, like you said, just planes.
Yeah, there's no drones there. There's nothing that emits that kind of light and moves in that way. I mean, we don't have anything today that splits and has equal mass. That's not even possible. You know, a 12-year-old kid, I witnessed something that was not possible. It changes your whole life. Changes your whole life.
And obviously in tow were the F-18s.
Yeah. I mean, they were breaking the sound barrier in a residential area. Like there's literally no excuse for that unless they were actually performing military maneuvers. Like I said, my brother and I were very much into military craft. My family's very militaristic. My father is a Marine. My grandfather and my great grandfather were both naval captains. I mean, my grandfather fought in the Pacific Theater in World War II. He was a captain in the Korean War. He was a decorated guy. He ran the destroyer school for a little while. He was a top dog. And, you know, we've always had an interest in, you know, military operations, vehicles, and what they can do, the technology, what it can't do. You know, when you look up in the sky and you see something that is only reminiscent of science fiction movies, it's crazy. And it basically solidifies the idea that, you know, we're dealing with something here that we don't understand. And that's everybody, from the guys that were in those jets to the guys that scrambled the jets to the, I'm sure, hundreds of people that saw this thing, you know, and that's just one instance. It happens all the time.
It's an eye-opener. Did you ever report it?
My brother and I were encouraged by my mom to write to Unsolved Mysteries, but we didn't hear back. I mean, this was the mid-90s. There wasn't really internet as we know it today. I didn't really have any pictorial evidence to give to something like MUFON. I just had an account. And again, I was a 12-year-old kid. I didn't know anything about MUFON. I just was listening to my mom. And I think my mom kind of kept a lot of stuff from us because she didn't want us to be scared. Because I know she had experiences. And, you know, I wish very much that I could have gotten into some conversations about that with her. But, you know, I guess that's going to be at a later time.
Yeah, sure. Gotcha. I mean, it's never too late to still file a report, whether it's with MUFON or the NASA Reporting Center. But Unsolved Mysteries, I'd imagine they get a lot of emails.
I'm sure. I mean, this was snail mail. I mean, we actually wrote the letter, put it in the little mailbox. it's a long time ago.
Yeah, the good old days.
But yeah, I mean, that's about it. I mean, it was a very brief encounter. I mean, the whole thing from start to finish, from the moment we noticed the orb in the sky to the moment the jets disappeared over the horizon, couldn't have been more than three or four minutes total.
I mean, when they saw the jets, you know, it's time to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were just checking stuff out. But I mean, it's strange because the size of the object was quite small. And when we first saw it, like I said, it looked like it was a planet. You know, it looked like it was a star. And when the jets were chasing it, judging by, you know, where it was in relation to the jets, it looked like about the size of the cockpit, like just the cockpit of a jet. It was not a very big thing, but it was very, very bright, traveled very, very fast. And, you know, even if it, like, I didn't really think of this at the time, but it could have been one of their drones, you know, like they don't have to pilot everything that they send here, I'm sure. So, and have us chase little drones around like it's no big deal. They got a mothership hanging out outside the atmosphere that we can't even detect.
Man has come up with that, then I'm sure they would have way ahead of us there.
Yeah, we don't have any that can split in two yet.
And it's a safety thing as well, isn't it? You know, you can pop your drone down and it's safe for you or your crew.
Yep. And that way, if something does go wrong, we get a bunch of pieces of metal that we don't know how it works, and we don't get any beings, as we've gotten in the past, I'm sure.
If we're lucky, yeah.
Yeah. It's a fascinating event, and I really hope somebody has seen it, or somebody has even experienced something similar that they've never really talked about, like me. Like, there's, I'm sure, multiple events like this have occurred all over the world.
And it's happening as we speak.
For sure.
I'm sure, you know, it's quite often the case when I have a guest on, I release it as an episode, I then get emails back about, you know, very similar, whether it's location-wise or it's similarities in the actual sign itself.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's therapeutic. And I very, very much appreciate the platform you've given just regular people. And I appreciate that you have, you know, people that experience some of the mainstream stuff. That it's just fantastic to be counted among the same ranks, because, you know, we're not alone. I mean, we're out there. There's a lot of us.
There is. And to be honest, I mean, I've basically, email-wise, I've been busy from the beginning. Some weeks I can have up to 400 emails.
Wow.
And it's not always about coming on the show and sharing it. It can be just people sending me pictures or videos, or, you know, so I get a wide range of emails, but I do get a lot.
I appreciate the opportunity to tell my experience very much.
This is what it's all about, you know, and I'm kind of glad that people are reaching out, you know, so it's working pretty well. It's just, like I said, it's just getting really, really busy. Hopefully I'll be able to start getting two episodes out a week, but like, there's a lot of work involved.
Indeed.
Beginning to end, so, as well as there's the other emails and other stuff to do in between all that, but.
And thanks again for your quick response. Like, I know it can't be easy doing all of the things that you do. Like, I've heard you say, this is just you. So
just me, yeah.
It's quite an endeavor that you've chosen to embark on. And I just want you to know that a lot of people out here really appreciate it very much.
Oh, I'm glad. It's always good to hear that. Always good to hear. And yeah, it's just me. I get a lot of emails and it starts off, thank you for your team and great what you guys are doing. I'm thinking, and it's just me.
Again, I can't thank you enough, man. I know it's a lot of work, and it's very much appreciated.
But it is a lot of work, but it's, you know, it's worth it. It really is. Yeah, but I really appreciate you coming on today, Gene, and sharing all that.
Hey, well, thanks a lot, Nick. I appreciate it.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye, Gene.
You too. Bye now.
Hey, loyal listeners of this podcast. I want to take a moment to tell you about my new show. It's called Bizarre Times. I'll be exploring everything from bizarre phenomena, places, rituals, people, customs, crimes, and more. There's two new episodes ready for you to dig into right now, and new shows are released weekly. Subscribe to Bizarre Times on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to audio. Again, subscribe to Bizarre Times. It's the ultimate feast for the strange and bizarre.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Hello, Steve, and welcome to the show.
Yes, nice to be here, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's great to have you on. And you're calling from Scotland.
I'm calling from Scotland now, yeah. I'm originally from Liverpool, but I live in Scotland now, yeah.
Great stuff. Now, your encounter goes back to 1974. Would you be kind enough to start at the very beginning for us, please, sir?
Sure. It was 1974. It was the 30th of June. And I think it was a Saturday or a Sunday night, just gone about 11:30. And I was probably about 11 at the time, and my younger brother was about 10. We were just bringing the washing in. My mum had left the washing out, and we didn't want it to get wet, so we're bringing it in. And he says to me, "Look at that there." And we both looked up, and hovering over the treetop was this white object, which was kind of shaking. It was kind of like a fallen leaf, kind of like it was just shaking. And it was just sat above the trees. And it looked a bit like the center section of one of these electricity pylons, but it was high as the top. It's a funny shape to describe. Well, the shaking kind of stopped, and it started coming down off the hillside directly towards us, about 4-5 miles an hour. Now it's coming across the rooftops, and it's about 50-60 feet above the roof, and it's coming directly towards us. And I would say the front was probably the size, probably like a large van. And I ran inside, and I got this little tiny Instamatic camera, a Kodak one, and I took two photos, which, incidentally, the negatives were even blank. Nothing came out on it at all. But then this thing stopped directly above us, and I could see it had a long fuselage on the back, like a cigar tube, and it was about two train carriages long, but it was in the dark. You could clearly see it, but there was no lights on. And I've got my brother standing on the right-hand side here, and he's saying to me, hit it with that stone, throw that stone at it and hit it. But I was just shaking from head to toe. I couldn't move, and I'm just mesmerized by this, and it's as it stopped above us. I just had this feeling they were watching and just looking and just seeing what we would do. I really didn't want to start throwing stones at it. Well, it seemed like no time at all. It started setting off, but it angled upwards very slowly, totally silent, and it just drifted away up and out of sight. Well, we went out. I remember telling the kids at school the next day or a couple of days later all about it. But as the years went by, I started kind of remembering things. It was like bits of a jigsaw, and I thought, where did that come from? And you kind of remember things. And I'm going to tell you what I remember. It took years and years to put all these pieces together. Now, what I can see is that I'm standing outside this metallic object, and it's almost to the ground. And I think that I'm kind of small in relation to this thing, but it doesn't have any legs. It's just kind of just off the floor. And it looked a bit like brushed aluminium. And I put my hand out and I touched it, and it was warm. But there was no doors and there was no windows at all there. And the only way in was, there seemed to be like a high-pitched noise, like a harmonic whistle. And the side kind of opened, fizzled away, opened. And I remember the edge, what you'd call like the structure, the fuselage, it was as thin as tinfoil, very, very thin. And now I remember standing there, probably, and an odd feature here was, if it was dark outside, you could actually see through the walls. You can see through the walls. And if it was dark outside, it looks like daytime. And on this particular part on the left-hand side. Now, I'm walking along, and it's really hot, and there's no air. So it's uncomfortable. But it's all very metal inside. And I can see the curve. As it curves to the right, it goes all the way around to the right, the curve. And halfway up, there's a little, there's like a shelf. It's about 6 inches from the wall, and it runs all the way around the shape of this object. And walking along, and here now I can see, I feel like, to be honest, there's something behind me. It's not a person, there's something behind me. I don't know who it is, but I can't turn that. And here now we have this large cylinder, clear, a glass or a perspex cylinder that goes from the floor to the ceiling. And inside it, there's grey and black material, and it's swirling around. And that's the engine. That's what I'm kind of picking up. That's the engine. And then we've got one a bit further, and there's a wall from that part to the next part. There's a wall, a silver wall. This is odd now, because in the next little bit, there's, if you remember the old-fashioned barber's chairs, there's two of those, but they're really small and highly chromed chairs, and they're just there on the right-hand side, beyond the wall, just there. Now, there's no dials, there's no switches, there's no levers, there's nothing. It's totally silent, but these chairs are just sitting there. How I understand it, I'm not quite sure how I know, is that when these little people sit in these chairs, they become part of the chair and part of the structure. And just by thinking, they go where they want to go. And now, turning around or heading towards the outside again, on the wall, there's this symbol, which I think it looks like writing to me. But if you can imagine a stick from 12 o'clock down to 6 o'clock, then branches coming up to the left and to the right. And on the end of the branches, the circles of different lengths. So we look like maybe like a thin Christmas tree with branches of different lengths with circles on. That's some kind of writing. I'm not quite sure what it says. And then that's how I remember that particular. So as the years went by, I contacted the Yorkshire UFO Society in 1987. And this was run at the time by a guy called Tony Dodd. And I went and told him all about this. And they documented it down. And it was all very interesting to them to come across all these things before. So I've become a member of the Yorkshire UFO Society. Now, Tony Dodd was actually a sergeant in the North Yorkshire Police. Now, his beat was around all the Yorkshire Moors. He knew them like the back of his hand, all the little villages and hamlets. That's where his beat was. Now, he's sitting there on this around this table with me, having a cup of coffee, and he's relating to me what he's actually seeing up there. Him and a pal were on duty at 3:15 in the morning, and there's a glow over the top of this hill on a road. So we drive round to see what it is. And he says to me it was a bell-shaped UFO sat on the road. And he said it had little legs. It was sat on little legs. And the legs went up inside. And it came down the road, just a couple of foot off the road, right towards the police car. So he turned on the blue light to see what happened, and he said, I remember the blue light flashing on the side of this object, and it was kind of like a glowing kind of yellowy white, but it just kept going. They had to reverse the police car out to the way because it was going to hit them. That's what he told me. So he had lots of encounters like that up on the moors. Now, he kept reporting them to his superiors, and he was told to keep quiet and not say anything. But he went to the press trying to uncover the truth of these things. And he lost his job. He was sacked from his job as a police sergeant. So then he became a full-time investigator, UFO Society. And he was full-time investigating all these strange objects and encounters. Now, he told me lots of times different things are coming in all the time. I used to go over there on a Sunday, go through the filing cabinets. There was no internet, no computers. And I would look at things and just try and put things together. But a few of the things that one of the most disturbing he told me about was he was contacted by detectives. He had a lot of contacts still in the police. And these detectives, they were investigating a large number of people who disappeared from a beauty spot in South Wales, the Brecon Beacons, from a particular area. And they were just asking him what he thought about some of the things that were strange about this, that there was no footprints at the site of the disappearances, and the dogs couldn't find any smell, and there was tents, various things left, abandoned cars, abandoned camper van. I saw a photograph of a camper van, actually, that had been abandoned. The door was open, there was things strewn about, and the two kids had gone. They couldn't find them. And this investigation went on for quite some time, and it reached the government. At the time, it was Margaret Thatcher who was in government, and she ordered the SAS to put this place under surveillance. Now, what they did, and it's a standard thing what the SAS do, they dug themselves into like a hole about a mile away, and they tend to cover themselves up, and they stay in that hole, and they watch this place with high-powered video cameras for 24 hours a day on shifts. And I know of at least one video where they videoed a big circular UFO landing there, and a tall being got out and two smaller beings got out. Now, that video, there'll be videos obviously somewhere, someone will have them. But the government are not really in charge. This is what people don't understand about these things. They always deny UFOs, but UFOs have a higher security clearance than nuclear weapons. So you have your nuclear weapons, which are top secret, and your UFOs are classed as above top secret. Now, when you go up the security scale, you come to a level called cosmic. Now, cosmic is directly under the control of Majestic 12, which is called MJ-12. And they have communications channels with aliens. Now, I can only assume that they've spoken to MJ-12, who have in turn spoken to these aliens through the authorized communication channels, and have told them to stop bringing attention to themselves. And funnily enough, all those disappearances stopped. The people never returned, but no more were taken from that area. Now, moving on from that one, Tony was contacted by an engineer who worked for the RAF somewhere down south. And this engineer telling his story that he was working in a hangar on an RAF base somewhere. And he remembers a big object in the corner that was covered up, and he wasn't allowed to go near this object. He's working away, and it gets towards time to go, around about 5. So he leaves the hangar, and he goes. But he's left something behind. I think it was car keys. But he goes back to the hangar. After about 20 minutes, he goes back into the hangar to look for his car keys. This is what he told us. Standing there, where he'd just been working, were 4 giant aliens. These guys were about 8 foot tall. They had blonde hair. They had light blue all-in-one-piece suit, and it was an insignia on the left-hand side. Now, they never spoke. They never moved. They just stared at him, and he grabbed his gear, and he just fled out of that place. And that was one of the things that happened there. I've heard about these guys before, and I believe my own investigation that they actually are the pilots of the TR-3B Astra Black Triangle. I think they're the pilots. That's just my theory about that. Now then, another thing that came through to us was all these military airfields, they're actually they're protected by the armed forces. They have their own special security. They do carry live ammunition, and they also have dogs, attack dogs. So this one come through. It was 3:15 in the morning, early hours of the morning. This group of about 4 army with guns and dogs are patrolling the inside of a perimeter. I think it was somewhere around the Iraq time when security was quite high. They come across someone who was walking across the runway. This thing was described as being about 5 foot, covered in long black hair with red bulging eyes. They shouted it to stop. It didn't stop. They set the dogs on it. The dogs run forward to attack and then just sat down, and the dogs just wet themselves out of fear. Utter fright, the dogs just wet themselves. So the guys opened up with the automatic guns, and they said we hit it several times, and it made no difference whatsoever. And it continued walking across the runway, and it just jumped over the fence, and it went away. Now, these type of things come in all the time. But and we could go on all night with this. But let me tell you now about what happened to Tony Dodd. There was four main characters in the Yorkshire UFO Society. Graham Burstall. There was Mark. There was his wife, Vivian, and Tony Dodd. Three of those people were killed with cancer. They always say it's cancer. Because even though there was no internet back in those days, they could command at least 2,000 people to turn up at these events. Now, Tony, what he was investigating was, even to me, was a little bit, it was just too much. You've heard of animal mutilations, and let's just recap what this is for people who don't know. Animal mutilations are animals, it could be a cow, could be a horse, often it is these animals, who have had procedures done to them in the field. And what you'll find is that the eyes have been removed and the tongue has been removed, part of the lower jaw. They've had a rectum core and all the blood has gone. It's been exsanguinated. And there doesn't seem to be any reason why this has happened. But what people don't understand is that the same thing does happen to people. And this is what Tony was investigating. As there was 9 bodies found on the outskirts of Leeds, each of them had the eyes removed, the tongue was missing, the blood had gone, this rectum core. I saw one photograph of that. He was warned many, many times not to, that was it. He'd stepped on too many toes. He was warned too many times. And he got some vicious type of cancer. And on his deathbed, he did say to us, they got me in the end. Now, if you look into these things with people being in that condition, you see it's very similar to the instances in Russia, the Arbatov Pass, where 9 hitchhikers, mountain climbers, walkers were found in the snow with the same condition. The eyes had gone, the tongue had gone, the blood had gone. And whatever, they were all shared in one large tent. Whatever happened to them, it seems that whatever it was came towards the front of the tent, is what I'm saying, because they slashed their way out of the side of the tent and they ran, often with no clothes on, through the snow. And there was 2 found, and their fingers were covered in splinters and the nails were covered in splinters, but they tried to climb a tree to get away from whatever it was that was going to kill them, and it did kill them. And that, you see this all over the world. But it's a subject which is it's not very nice, and you shouldn't really go into it. So,
yeah, I actually live about an hour away from the Brecon Beacons, and yeah, it is a site where people do go missing. I think there was a group of school kids back in 2015, 16, something like that, and the whole lot went missing, and they were found. But yeah, it's a very mysterious place, the Brecon Beacons. Let's go back to yours. Some of these memories that you actually have. How long after the experience with your brother did you start having these memories?
I would say it was quite some time. Yeah, it was quite some time. It would say the total recall would have taken years. Just thinking, well, where did that come from? What was that? And then you kind of think, well, that was real. That did happen. Obviously, he didn't, to be honest, he didn't live much longer after that. He passed away, unfortunately. But so I can't really, ask him, did you have the same thing? But he recalled, seeing that thing that night. And funny enough, I found a cousin on Fringe V United in about 2007. Linda name was. And we're talking, and she lived on the other side of the hill, where that UFO was. And she said, oh, yeah, I remember this UFO on the hill. So she could see it from a different angle, you see. That was bizarre. Yeah, just as the years went on, little bits come back to you about these things, and you often wonder what are they? Where's that come from? And it kind of slots together in your memory, and you kind of realise, yeah, this is something. You know, I think I remember going back inside. Although the whole thing at 11:30, I would say only a few minutes this happened, but I remember looking at the clock. And it was probably after 12 o'clock, you know, then. And we just went to bed and just tried to go to sleep. Well, just as time went on, that's all it was, Nick. I kind of remember these things. Don't feel frightened about it at all. Just bizarre.
Is the actual symbol itself, is it still very clear in your mind?
Yes, it's clear, yeah, sure.
Would you be able to draw me a picture of it?
Oh, yeah, sure. Don't, yeah, deal with that. No problem.
I mean, I've done a little sketch of what I think it might look like.
Oh, okay. Well, let me try and describe it a bit more detail for you. So a straight line from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock with branches of different sizes coming off it all the way down on the left and on the right with small circles on the end of both branches all the way down. So to me, it looked like, I don't know what it looked like, decoration, but it obviously means something, doesn't it? It must be some kind of writing or something.
Yeah, yeah, it seems familiar. And this cylinder, like you said, it was in the middle of the room,
mm-hmm.
and it was grey and black, like a liquid, a grey-black liquid.
Yeah, but that was just moving about slowly inside. It's quite a wide cylinder, just moving about slowly. Obviously, it wasn't engaged or doing anything. I don't know how I know that was the engine, but I was being shown that object for a reason. I think that's what they were trying to say. This is the engine. If they speak different languages to us, I mean, how did he tell you, you know? We just don't know, do we?
Interesting. Yeah, interesting if it maybe had a connection to the actual propulsion system of the craft.
Well, if you look at the CIA, I mean, they tell you all the time, there's 180 to 240 different types of alien documented on this planet anyway, as us and three others living on it. And I think the world, I view it now as like the movie The Men in Black, but, you know, with the active agency of the CIA. But that's obviously a bit more of a fairy tale. But it seems to be like that, where you get the Men in Black coming around trying to keep tabs on what's going on. If you get too close, you get warned. You know how many people have been taken out anyway. Loads of them. And unfortunately, these three were taken out. And Graham was the first one to go, and Vivian, and Tony was the last one. And Mark, he said he'll never go near the subject again. The place actually got raided. Tony's house was raided by the police. And they took everything, every file cabinet, every book, every envelope, every note, everything went. They took everything.
Yeah, it certainly makes you wonder. I mean, it's the same as David Mack in the US.
Yeah.
He was obviously exploring the whole abduction scene and the experiences and that. And he was over in London,
yeah.
And he was run over.
There's been so many who've gone, you know. But you've got to, I think you have to know where to draw the line. And if you are standing on toes, and you can't stand on toes, don't push it. It's not worthwhile. You're not going to change anything. You're getting into something which is just way beyond you. It's nice for a bit of a chat and a bit of a talk and, you know, talk about these things as an interest. But I wouldn't bother getting involved in any more than that.
Yeah, I mean, they do keep tabs. You know, that's for sure. I do keep tabs on people.
Nothing we can do about that. Just be aware and interested that these things do happen. They are out there. Some of them are back-engineered craft. You can spot the difference a mile off. And some of them are genuine alien stuff.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on today, Steve. That's absolutely great hearing all that.
I've had a great time, and get in touch anytime you want. If you want some more details, best of luck with it, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that. And it's always great to hear from people in the UK.
It's been nice talking to you anyway, mate.
Yeah, great talking to you, and thank you for the wife helping you out with the technical issues.
Yeah, she's here. Okay, she's smiling.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Take care, pal.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. See ya.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Keep those emails coming in to the usual address, ufochronicles@gmail.com, or head to my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com, where you can also contact me there. Pick yourself up a t-shirt and support the show if you so wish. A special thanks to Gene and Steve for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week with more witness encounters. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.